You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
When you look at a country where 39% of Americans right now believe this last election was rigged, that's a real problem for confidence in the integrity of our electoral system. And so I'm hopeful the Supreme Court will step forward to its responsibility and resolve this case and resolve other cases as needed.
December the 8th, 2020, those are the words of Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas. He says he is willing to present the oral arguments before the Supreme Court in the Pennsylvania case. Now, in the Pennsylvania case, they claim a 2019 state law allowing no excuse mail-in voting is unconstitutional. If the court agrees, well, then the Pennsylvania mail-in votes in this last election will be thrown out. We're waiting to see if the Supreme Court is even going to hear the case. They get something like 8,000 cases each year. They take about 1%, about 80. Of course, this is pertinent. It's imminent, and we need a ruling quickly. We'll see if that happens. It could happen while we're on the air. But in the meantime, there's something else in play. Just before midnight yesterday, the state of Texas filed a lawsuit that many think could be more important than all the others surrounding the presidential election. Texas brought a suit against four states claiming they did something they cannot do. They violated the U.S. Constitution in the way they conducted the presidential election. Now, they say this violation occurred regardless of any other election fraud, regardless of any results, and Texas names the states as Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Texas filed the suit directly in the Supreme Court. Article 3 of the Constitution, listing a small number of categories of cases in which the Supreme Court has original jurisdiction. One of those, controversies between two or more states. This could be a big game changer. But, of course, we also have other things in play. Attorney Sidney Powell filing an emergency appeal with the 11th Circuit, a Georgia federal judge, dismissing her latest challenge. And this is Safe Harbor Day. Safe Harbor Day means basically that this is a deadline. The Safe Harbor deadline by federal law requires Congress recognize the slates of electors chosen by states that have resolved election disputes by this date. The argument now moves to, well, are they really resolved? We had court challenges still pending at various levels, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, all of them battleground states. Biden won all of them, still seeking to overturn the November the 3rd presidential election. The Trump team, the Sidney Powell team, and others still looking for a way to deal with it. We're going to get into that in more detail as we go through the next 2 hours because, as I said, we're waiting to see, first of all, if the Supreme Court will agree to hear the Pennsylvania case. And Senator Cruz thinks they will issue a ruling sometime today. And again, he said, I have been asked by the state of Pennsylvania to handle that case, and I'm willing to do it for them if they want to. Senator Cruz has argued numerous cases before the Supreme Court before. He also, of course, was a prominent figure in the Gore Bush election. Will the lockdowns continue? We have to question, what kind of damage are we doing to our nation, to the businesses, to the workers, employees, families, the kids? And here's a question that maybe is worth considering at this point. Are we at a point now that we need to start thinking about massive, massive civil disobedience? Massive civil disobedience. What would that look like? Are we there yet? something for you to consider. We'll be dealing with it a little bit later in today's program. And then a couple stories that you're going to shake your head and say, don't tell me that. Yeah, don't. What I am going to tell you. There's a complaint in one area of the nation that Christmas lights are offensive. They're offensive. No, not on religious grounds. For an entirely different reason. You'll want to hear that story. And then a kid goes to Santa, one of the shopping malls, and makes a request and asks Santa, will bring him that? And Santa says, no, I will not bring that toy to you. No. Wait for that story. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Businesses, restaurants, nursing homes need to be free of COVID. So you should be contacting Wellington Environmental. A professionally trained team will disinfect your facility using powerful but safe disinfectants. And here's something new. Wellington has a line of foggers that you can use to disinfect your own facility. These foggers are in high demand, but Wellington Environmental has some for now. They cost about $500, but my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. You save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional disinfecting, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
My sponsors keep this program on the air. So my thanks to John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
The youngest of New York City school students are back in class today. Many of them are still not back 5 days a week. And before they even entered the building this morning, they were required to fill out a mandatory testing consent form. All across the city, it is back to school again for nearly 200,000 of New York City's students. The mayor and school's chancellor greeted kids in the Mott Haven section of the Bronx as elementary grades K through 5, 3K and pre-K all showed up for class this morning with their parents. COVID testing is now mandatory for 20% of all students and staff in every building every week. And students cannot attend class in person if their parents have not filled out a testing consent form.
That's a report from ABC 7 in New York City. It is back to school for the second time this year for about 191,000 of the million-plus students in public schools in New York City. And this comes nearly 3 weeks after the city did shut down schools over COVID, of course. These grades are K-5, pre-K, and 3-K students. They can all return for in-person learning. There's still some areas where they cannot. And, of course, the concern is we want to make sure the kids are safe. Parents have to be concerned, obviously. You know, they want to know that they're going to go in. And, of course, the other thing with kids, that young in particular, it's tough enough sometimes for adults to either remember or care to keep their mask properly over their mouth and their nose. And, of course, we know how kids will pick up something with their hands, and before you know it, the hands are in their mouth. So there are a lot of legitimate concerns. But everything that has been shown, for the most part, indicates the kids are not a transmission issue, not with them in school. Now, the other question comes into play. Do they have vulnerable residents living in their home, maybe an elder grandparent or a parent that may have some kind of health issues? But we have locked these kids down for so long that there's a lot of concern as to what we're doing to them. And we're talking about their issue of learning. We're talking about their social relationship. Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, appearing today on Fox News, he was talking about that very point. Now, Rand Paul is a physician, and he's also had coronavirus, by the way. And he said, when you start looking about this particular issue and the COVID virus and how we responded to it and what we've done properly and maybe where we have failed, he said, I can't and I would not ignore the concerns many have. But at some point, we had to say, stop a second. Look around, see what the evidence shows. Senator Rand Paul.
Look, this isn't a lack of compassion. I want people to get, you know, the vaccine. I want them to be able to avoid this scourge. But at the same time, keeping all our kids home isn't changing the course of this disease. They've studied this in four different countrywide studies. They've studied the incidence of the disease. They've studied the transference of the disease. And they've found that closing schools doesn't work. Even the socialist de Blasio is now opening schools.
He threw that in. De Blasio, as I said, now reopening schools again in New York City at lower grades. It's still no timetable on when the middle school kids and high school kids will be going back to school. And by middle, I think they might include junior high in that. But, yeah, there's still some decisions to be made. But let me share something with you that appeared in The Federalist, written by Christopher Jacobs. I actually tried to reach Christopher to get him on the air today, but everybody's got pressing schedules right now, and I understand that. What his article titled is, "Lockdowns Have Caused More Children to Drop Out of School Than Americans Have Died of COVID." Second line, "The idea that bars should remain open yet schools remain closed runs counter to any sense of logic, not to mention good public policy." Now, just the other day, Dr. Fauci made that remark. You know, close the bars, open the schools. He said all along, he claims all along that I was never for closing down schools. I'm not even going to try to challenge that because Fauci has been left, right. As I often describe to you, the turn signal indicator philosophy. It's on, it's off, it's on, it's off. Because Fauci had said the same thing about masks from the beginning. They won't do you any good, don't worry. Oh, you need them. No, they're not that big. They won't help. No, yeah, you do. There's no wonder that many of us are not only confused, frustrated, and just get out of my way. Let me make my own decisions. But this article by Christopher Jacobs refers to a survey conducted by CBS 60 Minutes, and it found that among 78 of the largest school districts in the nation, at least 240,000 students remain unaccounted for when school resumed. Virtually, anyway, this fall. We're talking about virtually, this last fall. 240,000 students didn't even show up virtually. You know where we stand right now on COVID? We have 283,000 deaths at this point, 14.8 million confirmed cases. And I will still question both of those numbers. If you want to accept them and say, well, that's coming right from the CDC, it's got to be legitimate. They're relying on what's supplied to them. And we know we have seen numerous cases previously where someone might be listed as COVID-related death because of their age, and maybe they had COVID when they went into the hospital. Maybe they had other issues. It may or may not be actually COVID responsible. Same thing with the testing. We're seeing more test positive because we're doing more testing. But on this 60 Minutes survey that found 78 of the largest school districts in the country, at least 240,000 students were unaccounted for when school resumed virtually this last fall. The article by Christopher Jacobs in The Federalist goes on to concern and focus on the past 9 months about the deaths we've had, pointing out each and every death does represent a tragedy. But it's also a tragedy involving kids, a slow-moving crisis, as he describes. Every child who does not return to school to complete his or her education represents dreams unfulfilled. It means diminished career prospects, lower earnings, increased trouble with law enforcement, drug use, then adds more expense to society, to the criminal justice system, welfare system, and on and on and on. There are times, of course, when we actually in this nation stop and think about what's best as to what's political. I know the politicians have had to wrestle with this, and as have health experts, and has same for families, parents. Will you send your kids to school if they say it's okay? Or do you still have enough fear? And then when they get the vaccine, which we're on the verge of getting an approval and passed around the nation pretty soon, will you accept it? The kids are in the line of what's going to happen next. There's no doubt about it. And if you have one child, so here's the other question. If you have one child, such as in New York City, if you have a child that is among K-5, pre-K, and they're going to that school, you got other kids at home that are maybe a teenager in junior high or high school, and they're not going to school. Riddle me, what's the difference at that point when the child that's been in school all day comes home to, with the other kids? Does it make any sense to you? Again, back to Senator Rand Paul on the sense that, are we watching evidence or are we just running around in fear?
I think ultimately the vaccine will be very successful, but I don't see any evidence that crowd control, hand washing, standing 6 feet apart, all these things they tell you to do, closing down the restaurants, closing down the schools, there's no real evidence that they're changing the trajectory of the disease. If you look at the incidence of COVID, it's going up like this. It's going up exponentially despite all the mandates. So those who say there is science just aren't paying attention to it.
And that point we raised yesterday. We've got many say, look at the science, look at the science, of course, when it comes to global warming. But on this, I don't think they're looking at the science because the science is not backing up what they've been doing, which raises the question, how much of it is science and how much is it control? As Senator Rand Paul said, it's not a lack of compassion. But keeping all of our kids home isn't changing the course of this disease. He also mentioned then closing the businesses. We're going to spend more time on that in the next hour. Well, part of this hour as well. The number of restaurants that have been closing. The National Restaurant Association says 110,000 restaurants have closed down because of all of this. And by when they're talking about closing down, they don't mean they're closed down waiting for a chance to reopen. They are shuttered. They don't have the money or opportunity to reopen. Now you take that 110,000 and you multiply it by the numbers who might be working there as a waiter, waitress, a bus boy, bus girl, dishwasher, cook, manager, whatever. And then you start looking at rent prices, and then taxes that disappear. Are we paying attention to science anymore? Are we just saying, let's use this as a political tool? Now, here's something else that has surfaced, and I think it's worth sharing. And when you first hear this headline, some of you might immediately say, what? That's racist. By the very fact it's reported. This is a piece from the New York Times, written by Eliza Shapiro, titled, 2,000 More White Children Return to New York City Schools Than Black Children. Now, at first glance, you might think, well, what does that have to do with anything? There really is a legitimate reason for the statement. 2,000 more white children return to New York City schools than black children on a number of reasons. If this is correct, and she's reporting some of the stats they have, She said 12,000 more white children returning to public school than black. I said 2,000. I got cut off here. It's 12,000. 12,000 more white children returning to school, even though there are many more black students in that district, in the New York district, than others. But the issue being, it's not really meant to be a race thing. It's looking at what is happening in that sense. Part of it is, for virtual learning, many of these families, the minority families, probably do not have adequate virtual learning opportunities for their kids. And if they're not in school, then they are really suffering. And you know how that's going to multiply as you move forward with additional family members, generations, and so forth going forward. The same thing we discussed a moment ago. It's not meant to put one group ahead of the other. It's apparently just a fact that 12,000 more whites, 12,000 more white students returning to school than black students, that in part there might be fear among minority community of sending their kids. And if they are keeping them home, are they really getting true and proper learning? And in fact, according to this survey that she's looking at, Latino students make up the largest share of students returning to classrooms, about 43%. And then they've got the issue in Chicago, where the teachers union is claiming opening schools, sending kids in there, it's racist. Now, that is a racist issue. Stand by, please.
Story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace. That story is true, I'm here to say I was driving that Model A. It's got a Lincoln motor and it's
this is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Well, my boots on the ground correspondent in Chicago, Andrew, had notified me of this. Didn't have a chance to deal with it yesterday, but it certainly deserves our attention. The Chicago Teachers Union, which represents more than 28,000 educators in Chicago, that's the third largest city of school district, tweeted out, the push to reopen schools is rooted in sexism, racism, misogyny. Sexism, racism, and misogyny. The Chicago Teachers Union. Now, I know you're letting it sit there and you're thinking it's percolating. So, and the tweet has now disappeared, by the way. They ended up pulling it down. And a spokesman for the union apparently refused any request for comment. So now they want to say that all of this of putting kids back in school, reopening schools, you're doing it for sexism, racism, misogyny, not for the benefit of the children. I just went through a litany of points at how children are hurting because they're not in schools and what they're losing now and down the road. And again, I remind you, keeping schools closed is not grounded in science, as you heard Senator Rand Paul state, and Dr. Fauci has finally said directly, yeah, we shouldn't be worried about the kids at school. A piece following up the Chicago teacher's tweet, written by Libby Emmons, dealing with that tweet, said basically this makes no sense in the sense that data doesn't support doing it this way, and to blame it all on hatred, racism, and so forth. She's pointing out, as do many others, that when you have this situation with these kids at home, you are losing a large part of the workforce, and usually it's going to be more effective to the minorities, as we said earlier. We've got parents that have to stay home. Somebody's got to stay home, take care of the kids if they're not in school, more than they were earlier, so they can't hold a job. As she points out, the idea by the Chicago Teachers Union is that the fact that the teachers are women, minorities, means their concerns are more essential than concerns of parents, even if the parents are at least half women and probably also black or brown. And children are suffering because of this, various aspects of isolation, lack of education. We've already gone through all this. And the data shows 74% of the Illinois teachers are women. and you're not going to open the schools to help those people, those teachers, those women, because a teachers' union decided if you're trying to reopen the schools, it's racist, sexist, misogynist. I guess, although they won't explain it, I guess they're trying to say you're putting our children into a petri dish to have them come down with COVID or something. If you're going to claim that by sending kids back to school, you're endangering them, and yet you simply accept if they don't go to school and don't get an education, they'll also be good, you've got a conflict I can't help you resolve. And again, we also come down to the issue, why do you have to bring up a race card on this when we're talking about not just health care of the children, but educational care, which is a key point. So Joe Biden is already making some decisions about who he wants to be in various places. His Health Human Services Secretary selection raising some very big concerning questions. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, when we continue.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
You ain't nothing but a hound.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I woke up this morning with a message from a friend in California who said that Javier Becerra is so far to the left, he makes Bernie Sanders look like a Tea Partier. Let's just go through the problems with this nomination. So first, he supports Medicare for All. He's going to be responsible for running Medicare and Medicaid and Obamacare and many other health care programs. He's going to use the discretion the law gives him to try to take away your health insurance on the job, to give less flexibility, less control to families and to states who are in charge of these health care decisions.
The words of Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, Republican. And he said, I woke up this morning, a message from a friend in California saying Becerra is so far to the left, he makes Bernie Sanders look like a Tea Partier. Becerra is the guy that Joe Biden is picking to head up Health and Human Services Secretary. Now, Senator Cotton has other issues with Becerra, and we'll get to those in a moment. But let me give you kind of a background on this guy. He is currently the California Attorney General. He played, apparently, a key role in events that led to the pardon of a convicted drug trafficker after the defendant's father contributed thousands of dollars for one of his campaigns. Just, you know, coinky-dinky, right? Here's the background on that story as it's compiled by Fox News, anyway. Carlos Vignale was in prison. His father, a California businessman, requested favors from several political figures, including Becerra, who was then a congressman, said, I need help. I need you to do something to help get my son out of jail. Well, Carlos later got a commutation from President Bill Clinton on the last day of his administration in January 2001. Kind of the thing that for many of us, it's one of the commutations presidents offer on the way out and didn't know much about it, didn't really mean anything. It just for some reason, they gave him a pardon. Convicted drug trafficker being pardoned. Well, a 2002 House report, this is after Clinton did this, said that Congressman Becerra conceded the Vignoles were not members of his constituency, but the father had been a friend and contributor for 5 years. That the father had contributed at least $11,000 to his political action committee between 98 and 2001. The L.A. Times reported Becerra acknowledged helping the father and then Congressman Esteban Torres of California, both of them contacted about helping. Then Becerra reached out to Alejandro Mayorkas, who was a U.S. attorney at the time, and, of course, is also Biden's pick to lead the Department of Homeland Security. And apparently Mayorkas also got involved. Because Becerra asked, is a commutation of the sentence possible? So Mayorkas took a look at the case and agreed the sentence was unfair. They in turn got into contact with the father, placed calls to Washington, including the White House, eventually Clinton, and learned more about it. Well, the House report said that Mayorkas' involvement was, quote, inappropriate and particularly troubling. He wasn't the only official Becerra contacted regarding that case. He also called the pardon attorney Roger Adams asking about things like this. I mean, it just went on and on and on that behind the scenes, Becerra, supposedly a man of law and order, now serving as the attorney general of California and hoping to become named the head of health and human services by Biden and confirmed, of course, by Senate, which is not likely to happen, was using all of his clout for a guy who made a contribution, a big contribution to his campaign that he recorded. Who knows what happened on the side? Now, I'm not saying there was. I'm just asking. Who knows? So Senator Cotton is raising the question about, look, you have to keep in mind that this guy that he's choosing is left of Bernie Sanders. He is going to push through even more things when it comes to taking control of your health care and all health care. If he's going to serve as the director, secretary, I should say, of Health and Human Services. And then there's that little issue you might question that he knows nothing about health. He's not a doctor, has no health medical training. Dr. Ben Carson, who's been serving for Trump, obviously knows a little bit of something about health, being a neurosurgeon in the past. But Senator Cotton says that's just one of the issues I have with Becerra.
He's a true radical on abortion. He supported the lawsuits against nuns. He's gone after pro-life activists in California who exposed some truly grisly crimes by Planned Parenthood. And third, look at what's happened in California during this pandemic. He has been on the forefront of locking down that entire state, of preventing schools from reopening and people going to church, of defending the kind of decisions we saw over the weekend where the city of Los Angeles will allow a well-connected film crew to set up a canteen in a parking lot of a restaurant, yeah, but won't allow that restaurant to serve people just outside their premises. Javier Becerra will be Joe Biden's nationwide lockdown enforcer. The Senate ought not to confirm him.
Right, and hopefully they won't. But you got to hold the Senate. And, of course, that brings us to the Georgia race coming up in January. Two Republican senators in Georgia, both up for re-election at the same time. The count currently in the U.S. Senate, 50 Republicans, at least in name, 48 Democrats, two seats open. That's these two seats in contest. If the Democrats win both of those seats, if there's a tie, when one of Becerra's predecessors, Kamala Harris, who was AG, will also step in and break the tie. Which, by the way, she also has been guilty of exactly the things you heard Senator Cotton refer to Becerra. Going after pro-life activists in California as they exposed grisly crimes, as he described it, by Planned Parenthood. Looking to sell baby parts, but then claiming we didn't, and yet they were caught on video acknowledging they did. And the California Attorney General Harris and then Becerra did not go after Planned Parenthood. No, they went after those trying to expose it. That is one of the appointments Biden is saying I'm going to move forward with. That's his plan. Another he's looking at is the Armed Services Committee. I mean, he's picking for to head up the Defense Department. Retired four-star General Lloyd Austin. Now, Lloyd Austin obviously has great credentials, but there are some problems, even from a prominent House Democrat who's got concern. And not that it means anything, but General Lloyd Austin III, commander of U.S. Central Command at one point, a black officer, and he served his country well. But there are some issues. And in fact, a prominent House Democrat who sits on the Armed Services Committee, Congresswoman Elisa Slotkin, who's a former CIA intel analyst who served in the war in Iraq three times under then Obama and George W. Bush, said that choosing the retired general to do that just, quote, feels off. In other words, she's not sold that that's the best person to come in and do that. Well, she might give more details at some point when she says feels off. But again, it has to go through the Senate for confirmation. Since I mentioned the Georgia election, the Republican National Committee did file a lawsuit today to ensure the Georgia election law is properly followed. They are seeking enforcement of two vital facets of the Georgia Election Code, governing the rights of duly appointed poll watchers and statutory safeguards attending the use of ballot drop boxes as a method of absentee voting. See, there's been a lot of concern, obviously, in Georgia as to how some of those boxes were secured or not secured, whether or not they were being watched over, whether they were properly handled, chain of custody. We already told you yesterday that one of the counties, I believe DeKalb County, could not come up with the chain of custody information to show who picked up the box, who delivered, where it went, and so forth. If you don't have a chain of custody, you have no idea what happened to that, quote, election box. So the Republican National Committee says, we're not talking about the past now. We're talking about coming up this January 5 Senate runoff. We want rules in effect, and we want to ensure there's no more of this kind of BS we saw with the election of the president. I know some of you say, oh, Larry, you again, you're fighting for Trump. Give it up. I still say there are many questions to be resolved, and we're going to get into that in much more detail in the next hour. But you should know this. President Trump releasing a video downplaying a possible run in 2024. He said, I know they're saying 2024, but I'm not interested. Wait. I'm not done. Let me finish what he said. I'm not interested in it right now. Let's do this one first. He said, no, let's. I'm going to continue fighting the 2020 presidential election as long as we can. He has given permission for the Government Services Accounting Office start releasing money, transition funds for the Biden team as they come in. But he said, no, we're not done yet. And we will explain that in more detail in the next hour. But coming back after the break, again, a shocking reminder of how we have hurt this economy and Americans all over. Please stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
People, keep on lighting. Soldiers, keep on.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So depending where you live, as you listen to this program or the podcast later, you know what's happening with restaurants around you, which ones you can go to, which ones you can't. If you own one, you are right in the midst of it. If you worked for one, and I use the past tense, well, then you also certainly know. If your family relies on any kind of supplying restaurants, you know what? It's a ripple effect that is massive, massive. I said earlier that the Restaurant Association, the National Restaurant Association, estimates 110,000 restaurants are closed for good. For good, they're not going to be able to come back. And we're not talking about those just closed down right now, waiting for a chance, or doing a hybrid, sending, you know, curb service or something like that. They are shuttered. They've lost all opportunity. And there's a piece written by Grub Street out of New York, dealing with New York bars and restaurants, raising the question that's just right in your face. It applies to New York, but it applies also across the nation. Have New York bars and restaurants passed the point of no return? The point of no return. And it deals particularly with, we got all these holiday parties. We should be seeing a lot of activity and business and money for the restaurants, the employees and the service personnel and the suppliers, all of them, hotels, so forth, all would be beaming. I mean, just absolutely booming with money coming in right now. People anxious to get out and do stuff. And the fear of COVID, maybe more so than the actual facts, had them shut down. And just as the weather turns colder in New York, the governor of New York is saying, well, that indoor dining will be stopped next week, possibly. And then you got California. They have better weather, but it does get cold there sometimes. And, of course, the state of California, the governor shuttered pretty much. The San Francisco region going to be under stay-at-home orders for several weeks into the new year. Much of the rest of California also under those orders by Governor Newsom. And some, their orders will expire by the end of this year. But the San Francisco Chronicle is predicting, and I'm quoting, a total restaurant apocalypse. A total restaurant apocalypse. Pointing out that restaurant workers be laid off en masse just in time for December 31, expiration of emergency federal employment aid. Restaurant owners say they're wrecked with guilt of having to cut people loose at this point. They know they got mouths to feed, and how are they going to be able to help them when the restaurant itself cannot survive and the restaurant owner is going down the tubes in a hurry? And Bloomberg News earlier this week said that 1 in 6 restaurants is already closed due to the pandemic shutdowns. I do not know if that reflects the national restaurant numbers I gave you a moment ago, or if it's specific. It doesn't say in this article if it's limited to one area. And, of course, who gets hurt the most? Those who the best job they can get. And so for some, it's very lucrative because they don't have the skill or training for something else, is being a waitress, a waiter, a cook, a dishwasher. And they're going to suffer the worst. And while we're worried about the spread of COVID, there's a story that comes out. A private COVID testing company is saying, according to the report of the Daily Beast, there was a 4-day art and music festival in Tulum, Mexico. Art with Me, kind of a Burning Man-like beach festival in Mexico. Many attended and then returned to the States, and they're estimating, according to this Checkmate Health Strategies founder, 60 to 70% of the positives in the last couple of weeks in New York City are linked one way or the other with folks who attended that beach festival in Mexico and then came back. And they saw the same thing in Miami, Florida. The World Health Organization, November 30th, deemed Mexico to be, quote, in bad shape. One of those who attended this beach-like festival in Mexico said there was not one mask, and I got more sick than I ever did in my entire life after that party. The organizers say, well, we had guidelines to curb the spread, but they're also, according to those who attended, there was a lot of finger food being served and guests kind of helping themselves and passing it around.
So when they're looking to blame someone, I guess we blame those who go to this art festival knowing that there might be issues, and then go back to their communities. Coming up in the next hour, the question needs to be raised. It has been raised by a writer, and I want to share his thoughts with you. Are we ready? Is it a time? With all this happening, schools closing, restaurants being shuttered, sometimes with or without evidence, is it time for mass civil disobedience? We're not talking about burning and torching and looting. Mass civil disobedience in the face of lockdown orders. Think about it. We'll deal with that, and of course the latest challenges as a Trump team tries to keep the fight alive. That's coming up in the next hour. Please stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.